Harper Audio presents Life Sentences by Laura Lippman, performed by Linda Emond. Chapter 1. "Well," the bookstore manager said, "it is Valentine's Day." "It's not that bad," Cassandra wanted to say in her own defense. But she never wanted to sound peevish or disappointed. She must smile, be gracious, and self-deprecating. She would emphasize how wonderfully intimate the audience was, providing her with an opportunity to talk, have a real exchange, not merely prate about herself. Besides, it wasn't tragic, drawing 30 people on a February night in the suburbs of San Francisco, on Valentine's Day. Most of the writers she knew would kill for 30 people under these circumstances, under any circumstances. And there was no gain in reminding the bookseller, Betsy, oh dear, the name had vanished. Her memory was increasingly buggy, that Cassandra had drawn almost 200 people to this same store on this precise date 4 years earlier, because that might imply she thought someone was to blame for tonight's turnout. And Cassandra Fallows didn't believe in blame. She was famous for it, or had been. She also was famous for rallying, and she did just that as she took 5 minutes to freshen up in the manager's office, brushing her hair and reapplying lipstick. Her hair, her worst feature as a child, was now her best, sleek and silver, but her lips seemed thinner. She adjusted her earrings, smoothed her skirt, reminding herself of her general good fortune. She had a job she loved. She was healthy. Lucky. I am lucky. She could quit now, never write a word again, and live quite comfortably. Her first two books were annuities, more reliable than any investment. Her third book, well, that was the unloved, misshapen child she was here to exalt. At the lectern, she launched into a talk that was already honed and automatic 10 days into the tour. "There was a pediatric hospital across the road from where I grew up." The audience was mostly female, over 40. She used to get more men, but then her memoirs, especially the second one, had included unsparing detail about her promiscuity, a healthy appetite that had briefly gotten out of control in her early 40s. It was a long-term care facility where children with extremely challenging diagnoses were treated for months, for years in some cases. Was that true? She hadn't done that much research about Kernan. The hospital had been skittish, dubious that a writer known for memoir was capable of creating fiction. Cassandra had decided to go whole hog, abandon herself to the libertine ways of a novelist, forego the fact-checking, the weeks in libraries, the conversations with family and friends, trying to make her memories jibe with hard, cold certainty. For the first time in her life, despite what her second husband had claimed, she made stuff up out of whole cloth. The book is an homage to The Secret Garden, in case the title doesn't make that clear enough, and it's set in the 1980s because that was a time when finding biological parents was still formidably difficult, almost taboo, a notion that began to lose favor in the 1990s and is increasingly out of fashion as biological parents gain more rights. It had never occurred to Cassandra that the world at large, much like the hospital, would be reluctant to accept her in this new role. The story is wholly fictional, although it's set in a real place. She read her favorite passage. People laughed in some odd spots. Question time. Cassandra never minded the predictability of the Q&A sessions, never resented being asked the same thing over and over. It didn't even bother her when people spoke of her father and mother and stepmother and ex-husbands as if they were characters in a novel, fictional constructs they were free to judge and psychoanalyze. But it disturbed her now when audience members wanted to pin down the real people in her third book. Was she Hannah, the watchful child who unwittingly sets a tragedy in motion? Or was she the boy in the body cast, Woodrow? Were the parents modeled on her own? They seemed so different based on the historical record she had created. Was there a fire? An accident in the abandoned swimming pool that the family could never afford to repair? Did your father really drive a retired marathon cab painted purple? asked one of the few men in the audience, who looked to be at least 60, retired, killing time at his wife's side. I ask only because my father had an old DeSoto and... Of course, she thought, even as she smiled and nodded. You care about the details that you can relate back to yourself. I've told my story, committed over 250,000 words to paper so far. It's your turn. Again, she was not irked. Her audience's need to share was to be expected. If a writer was fortunate enough to excite people's imaginations, this was part of the bargain, especially for the memoir writer she had been, and apparently would continue to be in the public's mind, at least for now. She had told her story, and that was the cue for them to tell theirs. Given what confession had done for her soul, how could she deny it to anyone else?